Recording has started.
Okay, thank you. I just got notice I have to raise my volume. This is Victoria speaking and starting up the meeting of the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group team meeting. And maybe I jumped the gun on it slightly, but anyhow. So the first thing we'll do is welcoming you all, and we'll do a review of the agenda. And please let me know if I'm speaking too slowly, too softly at this point. So the first thing was review the agenda, then the SOIs, then we'll go through the work track updates, then we'll go into a discussion on community comment to discussion. There is a working document, and it is in a Google Drive document where the URL is in the agenda. Then there'll be any other business, but we also, somehow that got stuck in before, ICANN 58 planning, which we need to do, and overarching issues, drafting teams reminder. Looked at the team in the last couple, at the sign up list in the last couple days, but when I did, there were not a lot of people having signed up. Maybe there are now. I will check it during the meeting. Is there any changes anybody would like to see to the agenda? No? Does anybody have any items of any other business that they would like to mention now? I will ask the question again when we get to any other business, but if anybody has one now, it's good to start. Okay, none. In which case, hearing nothing, I guess we can proceed with this agenda. So the next item is the SOIs. Does anybody have an SOI they want to update at this point for any material changes in their situation? Okay, I see none. Just want to remind people that if there is a material change in your situation, you need to update your SOI, and we'll invite you to mention it at our next meeting, especially if it is pertinent to this group. Okay, then we'll move into the work track updates, and I'd like to start with WT1. Which of the co-leaders of that group would like to take that on?
Hi, Aubrey. It's Krista. Can you hear me?
Okay, yes, I can, Krista, so please take it away.
Okay, for just a quick update, today we have a call, or I guess later this evening. Our agenda is accreditation. Again, we'll kind of re-engage that topic because it's been on the back burner for a while. We're going to do hopefully a close-off on some of the application fees and discuss maybe some discussion around the cost recovery gap between the fees and any potential floor amounts that we are, I guess, concerned about. We'll do a quick follow-up on prioritization, including some information on the IDNs, continuing the conversation from last meeting. We'll briefly touch on systems and communications, but then jump into the new topic of the week or bi-week is the application guidebook, and then we're going to get into the CC2 questions. So for anyone who's joining, I would recommend reading that ahead of time to avoid us reading any long bedtime stories. So that's about it for work track one.
Thank you. Any comments or questions from anyone? Okay. One thing I want to add to almost all of these work track updates is to ask people to really get involved in them at this point. Sometimes it looks like there's just not enough people putting effort into it and very worried about the co-leaders, and a couple people in each group are working really hard, but all of the group need more people pitching into the conversations, the calls, and the email lists. And I'm going to repeat that three more times. And now I still see no questions or comments on W1. Please, on WT2, work track two, which of the two co-leaders is prepared to give an update on that? We have the leaders here. Well, track two we've got. So who's giving? Okay, Jeff, please.
Yeah, thanks. I'm not sure if Phil's on. I mean, I see his name, but I'm not sure he's on audio. If he is, maybe he can interrupt. But I'll just give a quick from Work Track 2. There is a meeting this week, as it is Tracks 1 and 2, as you heard from Work Track 1. This week, the topic will be talking about the terms and conditions, which was in the applicant guidebook as Module 5, I believe. So there will be a discussion from a policy level on those terms and conditions. But note that we're not going to rewrite those terms and conditions. We're not expecting group edits or lawyers to be on to rewrite the text. It's really to talk about the concept and whether we should put anything in there, for example, there was a case and another case on whether this was called a contract of adhesion, meaning, should they have excluded certain claims. And there was also an issue of, to the terms of use, should it have had a provision in there about the unauthorized access into people's applications. So it's more on just concepts, again, not on on actual rewriting legal text. And the second update, just to keep everybody in a loop, in the where were we last? I try to remember where we were. Wherever we were for the last meeting, it was decided that Hyderabad. We were had thought that the cross-community working group on the use of country and territory names at the top level, we thought at that point from the meeting that they were likely to refer some of those or the issues they were working on to our group, specifically Work Track 2. To date, the group still meeting. They have not yet come out with their final recommendations, although I understand they will come out with final recommendations fairly soon, or at least in time for the Copenhagen meeting. Until then, Aubrey and I and ICANN staff are trying to liaise with the group and with the GAC and others to see if we can start bringing in some of those discussions or at least set up a framework for having some of those discussions in our work track two or with a separate drafting team. So we're working on that. We don't have any other news other than we were hoping it would have been resolved by now, but we're still working on it. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. Phil, was there anything you wanted to add? I see you're now connected on audio. And just if you had anything to add, wanted to give you a chance. Emily has her hand up. Thank you, Rubens, for alerting me. Emily, please.
Thanks, Aubrey. This is Emily Barabas from staff. I just wanted to make one small correction regarding the schedule of the CWGUCTN schedule. So the report will be going out for public comment probably in the next week or so, and will still be in its public comment period during ICANN 58. But we're expecting that the final report will be available shortly after that once the public comment period has closed. Thanks.
Thank you, Emily. Okay, seeing and hearing nothing else, again, I want to reiterate that Work Track 2 could certainly use more active participants. We have a lot of participants, but only some of them are carrying the burden. So once again, if the issues in Work Track 2 are important to you and are things that are likely to move you to speak at the end of our process, please get involved early in the process. Okay. Moving to Work Track 3. Who from that group is that leadership is prepared? Karen, I see your hand. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. This is Karen. Work Track 3, we're in our in-between week this week. Last week, we had a call where we went through a straw man proposal that we have for making some changes to the legal rights objections process. And that is now out on our list for discussion, although it is a very quiet discussion at the moment. And our next call will be on the 21st, and on that call we will be tackling the issue of confusing similarity objection process. So if you have any experience with that from the past go-around, please do join us. We'd love to have your input on that. And that's where we are with Work Track 3 right now.
Thank you very much, Karen. Anyone have any questions or comments? Jeff, I see your hand. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. And I know you were going to say this anyway, Avery, but, again, it's important to contribute on this. There have been some pretty novel ideas that have been floated for some of this stuff, including on the legal rights objections. So, if these items are discussed and then they're put into email, we need to judge whether people in this group agree, disagree, have some opinions on it. And so, I know that there's been kind of a lax in participation, but we do need to move this stuff forward. So if there have been proposals that have been made, which are happening, and they're not commenting on, they could end up being part of the next application window. So please pay attention to the proposals that are out there. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. And because I said I was going to repeat it on each, even though Jeff did, you've been encouraged by both. Again, please do not take participants to be just, we're tracking it, we're watching it, but not participating. That is the role of observers and all that. Lots of people are signed up as participants. It would really be good to see most of them participating. This goes beyond getting the work done. We've gotten to a point where we may need to notify our liaison to the Dean and the council itself that we're not sure that we've got sufficient diversity of groups in terms of stakeholder groups, constituencies, ACSO, what have you, participating. And, not that is a problem yet, but it's becoming one, because if at the end of the day we can't say we had full, wide, diverse participation, every group was there, every group had people talking and participating, we will have trouble saying we did our work. So, and I will speak to this one more time, but for now, I can move to Work Track 4, which is Work Track 4 with
support. Ruben's just quick off the mark there. Look at him.
Yes, Ruben, please go ahead.
Hi,
I'll give you a chance to.
But I defer to Jerry if she prefers.
Not at all, Rubens. I think you can report on our excellent, informative, and interesting meeting of last week.
Thank you, Cheryl. We had our Work Track 4 call last week focused on IDNs. and a growing sentiment inside the work track of doing two policy changes regarding IDNs. One is allowing one charter IDNs in specific conditions where one charter means a lot. Let's not be precise there, because being precise is exactly what we are trying to do in the work track. And the other being allowing for variant TLDs. But for in order to allow for variant TLDs, require specific policies dealing with possibly confusion that could arise from having some such variant TLDs. So that's what we had work track for last week. Next meeting, we are hoping to discuss universal acceptance, but that is contingent on getting UA experts on the call, as we had an IDN expert on our last call, which was Sarmad Hussein from ICANN staff. So that's it for Work Track 4. Thank you, Avery.
If I can just jump in, Avery, briefly, Cheryl, here's the record. Just before you, for everybody to join us, and yes, please do. Next week's call is the 23rd, and it's at 0300 UTC.
Okay, thank you. Anybody have any questions or comments? Okay, and not to be a broken record here, but perhaps this group as well, while it's had some excellent discussions, and I do recommend that people go back and listen to that IDN discussion. Again, this is a group that needs more participation to make the recommendations on behalf of all of us that we'll all have comment on, and it would be really quite a pity to get to the point where we've got the recommendations, and at that point, people start coming in with their ideas and actions and force us to have to reiterate the process. So please, people, start really participating. You know, in our schedule, we're well through the schedule, and it's time. So please, folks, hopefully repeating this four times with the help of Jeff and others has convinced some of you to get more involved, but please get more involved. Any last questions on the work track reports? If not, then we'll move to the discussion on community comments to discussion, and I'll turn it over to Jeff, who's going to lead that discussion. Please, Jeff.
Thank you, Aubrey, and I just typed it in. I guess I'll repeat it. So the work track four discussion from last week was really helpful. I thought it was a very clear explanation in, you know, easy to understand, at least for me, easy to understand English, an explanation of IDN issues that for a while, you know, seemed really complicated, but a good discussion of variants and other issues that even if you're not in work track four and just want to know about IDNs and just understand it a little bit better, it was about an hour long meeting, actually went a little bit over an hour, but especially helpful to understand some of the issues we're dealing with. Now kind of changing gears as introduced by Avery. So each of the work tracks are working on questions to include in the CC2 document, but we also want to make sure that we're going over these questions with the full group. Emily has put a link in the chat to the actual document. There's some language in red on there only because I couldn't figure out at first how to show edits, so I wanted to show that these things have changed. Now I know that I can put it in suggestion mode and it shows up as edits. I will be sure to do that from now on. But if you see some red text on there, it's not because it's any more important than any of the other text. It's just I messed up and didn't have it in suggestion mode, but I think I've fixed that. So there is a whole introduction before Annex A. If you want to comment on it, please feel free. We, meaning the leadership team, have not really focused on that intro language before Annex A, and so we just haven't paid attention to it yet. So the language that you see there is kind of just filler for now until we can put some language in there. But if you have some suggestions and want to write and help us, more than welcome to do that. So everybody's got control, Emily says, of the PDF, so that's good. And again, the purpose here is to not wordsmith the questions. I think each of the work tracks will drill down into more detail, but really to get some comments on whether we've missed some subjects or whether whether you think we shouldn't ask these questions, or if you have any just kind of overall comments. So with that said, going to work track one, again, these will be discussed in more detail tonight, or at least tonight my time, tomorrow for many of you. The first set of questions talks about an RFP program or accreditation program. This has been updated even in the last 15 minutes. I put in some changes to make it sound less than the term accreditation, just because I know that term accreditation has has some controversy in the word accreditation, and it means different things to different people. So trying to reword these questions as more of an RFP program instead of calling it accreditation. So we're asking about, whether this is, whether others see the benefits or risks of having such a program. We're asking that if there is such a program, what are some of the ideas on how to control for scalability, if we should control for scalability, and other requirements. And then finally, there could be a relationship between the transfer of an RFP for an existing registry to this work. I've reworded the third question, so should the transfer be in this PDP, but more an acknowledgement that work on a transfer process is already underway, and should this PDP use the findings or the work done in that existing mechanism to feed into this PDP. So it's more worded not should we take over the subject, but should we borrow some of the learnings from that process that's ongoing. And if anyone has got any comments, I'm trying to read the chat as we go along. Just let me know, wants to raise their hand. So on the next area is on applicant support, and it goes into just some of the issues from the last round, 2012, and asking whether some of the suggestions that have already been made, whether they find value in that, and the second part is, what else other than financial consideration should be, what else other than financial support should we be looking at, if anything, and, how to make sure that there's enough notice about this program or more awareness, not necessarily notice, of the program to bring others in. Okay, I'll move on, seeing as how there's not much discussion on this. And then clarity of the overall application process. There were a number of areas in which others, which seemed to need some revision. And so things like our customer support, application prioritization. And so what is a way to make sure that if there's any changes needed in the middle of rolling this out, how can we should we do that, or and or how can we do that without disrupting the program going forward? Starting in 1.4, you'll see that the people who made changes there understood the concept of suggestion mode, which I appreciate, and now we'll be able to do that. See a comment from Trang on the accreditation. Should the eBro program be factored into the RSP program discussion? Trang, I think there is a discussion. Let's see when we get to the work track two areas to see if eBro is taken care of there. And if there's anything not covered in there, perhaps we can add some additional things as to how it may relate to an RSP program. But let's keep note of that. I think that is, I think there are some connections there. In 1.4,
Hi, Jeff. Can I just say, it's Susan here. I'm trying to get into the Adobe room, and I wonder if the operator could let me in. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, sorry about that, Susan. If Michelle, can you look at, into that? Or Emily?
Sorry, this is Denise. I'm unable to get in either, and I'm on the mobile app. Thanks for your help, Michelle.
Okay, sorry, Susan. We'll try to get this worked out shortly. But if you can let me know in a couple minutes if we have not gotten it fixed. I know it's definitely hard to follow the conversation if you're not viewing the document. So let us know if you have any questions. So the application fees, this comes out of a discussion from, I believe it was the last Work Track 1 call, where there's some good discussions about the mechanism of determining what the fee should be, not what the actual fee should be, but the process of determining that. In 2012, it was a cost recovery, and so we're asking questions of whether we should still be on a cost recovery model, whether there should be, if we find out for whatever reason that the cost would only be would be a lot lower than the $185,000, do we then entertain the notion of having a floor, meaning that there be it's cost recovery, but if it turns out the cost is so low, there may be some policy reasons to inflate the price to ensure serious application. So there have been some that have mentioned that concept. Emily? Emily, you have your hand raised.
Thanks, Jeff. Sorry about that. Just getting off mute. It looks like we're having a little bit of trouble with the Adobe Connect room. If people are having trouble entering or re-entering, can they just try just doing it one more time, and we'll see if that solves the problem, and if not, we'll get some additional IT support. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Emily, and sorry for those of you that...
One thing I want to ask for anyone while we're dealing with this, the agenda that was sent out includes the URL for the document. So if you can't, while this is being worked out, you can bring up the document on your own so you can follow the discussion a little bit more easily. Thanks.
Thanks, thanks, Aubrey, and hopefully you will be able to figure that out soon. Okay, going back to the document on the fees, there's also a discussion of, you know, a shortfall or how to deal with if there is a shortfall or a sizable surplus. So that's the there's a question on that. And I'm not reading the questions specifically because I think they're still in the process of being wordsmithed and really want to make sure that we've asked the right questions or if there's anything additional to make sure this group is okay with the questions that we are asking. But I do understand that the way questions are worded will also affect your views on that. And then the last the last question is, should we, in the as a policy matter, discuss how a surplus or shortage of funds should be handled? And that, because that was left unsaid in the last round, there is what we all believe to be a fairly sizable surplus, but there's no guidance as to how that surplus will or can be used. So we can't necessarily affect how the surplus is going to be used this past round, but hopefully we can affect how a surplus would be dealt with in a future round. Okay, I'm just looking for any comments. And then finally, there was a, or not final, but finally on fees, there was a, for the variable fees, there was a discussion on whether different types of applications should have different types of costs. And, you know, a discussion within the work package had led to the thought that there really wasn't that much difference in terms of cost to do those types of applications. But asking whether the community agrees with that or not, and but also that we really need to obtain that costing information. The things that we talked about as well, and that we will be talking about tonight or tomorrow on the WorkTrack 1 call, it's the application submission period. So it was supposed to be a 60-day period. It turned out to be 60 plus 45, I believe, because of the a glitch in the system. So, but the guide, the application, I'm sorry, it was 90 plus 45, but it was supposed to only be 90 days. So that said, that you know, is this an appropriate period? There were some discussions within the work pack about, well, maybe that's good for the first coming application window, but potentially future application windows might not need as much time. So that's also up for discussion. Application queuing. This was in the last round. There were a couple issues here. There was one, there was an issue of prioritization of IDN that happened in this last draw. I should say two things. Number one, the concept of a priority draw as opposed to the what was initially envisioned, which was the digital archery. So that was discussed, and the group seems to be leaning towards the draw being an appropriate mechanism subject to legal concerns. And so if that's the case, you know, asking about that, but also then there was prioritization given to IDNs in the last round. Is that something from a policy perspective? Should we codify that? Should we do away with that? Is there still a need for it? So those are just some of the questions on the queuing. And on systems, this is something I guess we'll get into, but there's a discussion that will happen later on in WorkTrack 1 on the systems used for the application process, the evaluation process, the communications with applicants versus communications with existing registries. And so all of those are mentioned in the staff implementation report, which I'm rereading, which I encourage everyone to reread as well. And same thing with communications, that there was certainly a focus on ensuring that there was equal access given to each applicant as well as existing registry operator in the process. So there were certain methods of communications that were developed by ICANN staff in implementing the program, and you know, sometimes the balance of those of equal access combined with making sure questions were answered led to some delays, and whether there's any improvement that could be made on that process. There were no metrics for success defined in the applicant guidebook or by policy for communications or customer service. or implementation. So is that something that we want to put in place? And then finally, the last work track one is on the applicant guidebook and whether that's still the roadmap, the right way to go forward. Okay, that's work track one. Looking for any comments or questions? Sorry, going back. I'm hoping Susan back is in the room. Going back.
Yes, Susan.
Yeah, I'm here. Yes. Thank
you. Okay, good. Thank you.
Actually, since I'm talking, it's Susan Payne, I was just going to make a quick comment. Sort of wearing my, I'm supposed to be one of the liaisons between this PDP and the RPMs one. And one of the subjects that we seem to be spending a lot of time on in the RPM working group is around sort of the topic of kind of communications / education. And it seems to me that really what we're concerned about in that group is about we've been talking a lot about whether the trademark clearinghouse has a ought to have an obligation to be doing more to educate people who are not trademark clearinghouse users, and actually it seems like from my perspective it seems to me and from the perspective of many of the other participants that actually where the communication and the education needs to be happening is at a more general level about the program itself. And if there's a lack of understanding about things like rights protection mechanisms or what a trademark claims notice means, it should be coming from ICANN. And so I guess I'm just raising this and I suppose asking the question of whether you feel that this is something that should be discussed in this PDP rather than in the RPMs one.
Thanks, Susan. I think that's a great question. I think that's a good subject for the next Work Track 1 call. So I'm hoping that that Krista and Sarah are keeping note of that. I do think that there could be, in theory, audiences, or maybe not. So I, at this point, just kind of gut tells me that it's probably appropriate for both. To discuss because of the potential for different audiences that for the new GTLD program versus those that want to protect their rights after the registries launch or at that time. But there is some overlap as well.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. So we'll add that for the next discussion, Work Track 1, later on. And then just to read some of the comments, Donna says understanding the audience is important. Can you all still hear me?
You do, Jeff.
Yeah.
I can hear
okay,
you fine.
My computer just got hung up, and so I didn't know. I know that if it disconnects me from the Adobe, obviously I'll be disconnected for the call. Okay, so then there's some comments going back and forth on Work Track 2, which is probably good because that's where we're getting to it right now. I'm just reading to see if it's related to this. But, okay, for the Work Track 2 comments, you'll notice that there are a number of topics in Work Track 2 that we have yet to get to, so what we try to do for some of those towards the end is to create questions based off of either the implementation report or to some comments that we knew about from the original issue report. But the discussions we have had, base registry agreement, there are some questions in there about the base registry agreement. For second level RPMs, most of it is really just a reference to the PDP group that's already doing the work. But there, there are a couple areas that have been referred to us, like the PIC-ERP and the RRDRP. So we do want to develop questions based on those. So the ones that are in there now are very preliminary. All right, I'm just trying to check the comments. Okay, reserve means is a topic that the WorkTrack 2 spent a couple of sessions talking about, and so there were some questions that are drafted there about about aspects such as the string requirements, the reserve names, the strings ineligible for delegation, the specification 5, and some other areas in there. Question, Caboose.
Maybe it is not appropriate time to ask this question, but I wish to raise that. I think a lot of good question has been raised. Do you think that during the ICANN 68 would be an opportunity that SO and AC, at least some of those who require further explanation or this, or clarification, could be an opportunity that someone from your group describe or explain the situation to some of the SO and AC that continually or continuously following up this group in order to be able to answer. And that is connected with the timeline of that you require that this question be answered. It's a very general question. I wanted to raise it before, but I just let you finish your explanation and then take that. If it is not an appropriate time, please reply at an appropriate time. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. I think that that's a good suggestion. Avery, do you have your hand raised, or did I see someone or Caboose's hand go down? I imagined it. Okay. I do think that's a good suggestion. And Avery, now you do have your hand up. Yes.
Yeah. I didn't have my hand up, obviously. I didn't think I did because I was thinking about it. In terms of the Caboose question, I too think it's a good idea. It may be something that we want to put under the ICANN meeting schedule. It's certainly something we can add under any other business in terms of that. And it dovetails into something that I have been thinking on the reserve means. And I think I brought it up in the meeting, but it may be a wider question. I don't know how many people here follow the work done in the IETF, but there is work going on now that may or may not have an effect on reserve names, both at top level, possibly a second, but at top. And I'm wondering whether this group feels it's important for us to get at some point a overview of that work, either that I can give as somebody that participates in that work also, or we could ask one of the IETF experts to come in and talk to us. So I just wanted to put that on the table so that that's not an issue that sort of is ignored completely. If we decide that, no, that's their business and none of ours, then but I do think that's something that we need to at least pay some attention to. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. If anyone has any thoughts on that, just waiting to see if anyone wants to get into the queue. Okay. Moving on, there are some questions as well on registrant protection. This is relates to an area we have been discussing work back through the last couple of meetings, things like the continuing continued operations instrument, the data escrow, registry performance specifications. These were all listed by ICANN as registrant protections. And so there are questions here about the COI, about Ebro, and also about this is where the issue of background checks comes in. And if you look, there were this was considered by ICANN to, though we don't have a question on it yet, this is the area where ICANN included background checks to ensure that what they had said was to make sure that there were no known felons or criminals or cyber squatters or others that would get, would run a CLD. Kirill. Here. You might be on mute.
I said that perhaps I should a little bit qualify your question. You could not say there is no cyber attack or cyber malicious or so on and so forth. They will be a minimum or less because it exists. Today it exists. I was discussing in some other meeting outside the ICANN and there was a lot of complaint about this issue. But this is not my question. My question, you talk about protection of the registrar. And I have an indirect question, which is the following. Some registrar, they have restriction to make a contact with ICANN in some particular GTLD. What is your answer to that question? Why there is a restriction? Because I can, before providing that access, need to go to sort of contact with the registrar and access to some of those GTLD. I don't want to go too much in detail in a specific case. They prevent them to have access. And that is contrary to the access to the people and non-discriminatory access. What you can do in this new GTLD? Why a particular country should put restriction to register of other country or countries to have access to a particular GTLD? Is it something that you could at least listen and address, not completely, but to some extent, by saying that there is a question? I have received some comment on this, that the registrar from certain countries, that one, they have problems, difficulty to have access to some GTLD. Thank you.
Thanks, Kavos. I think that does relate to, if we scroll down in Work Track 2, one of the subjects that we haven't yet got to is a discussion on registrar separation and non-discrimination. And what you bring up is an issue of registries that may prohibit registrars from operating within that top-level domain, and in this case by country, and in other cases by other factors. And so I think that does relate to the Section 2.8, scrolling down here, 2.8 of these questions. So I think perhaps we can take that question and draft something that seeks to answer your point about registries discriminating against registrars, and in your example, by country. So I'm just reading the comments.
I have asked the Secretariat to kindly, if possible, put down my question in the notes of this meeting and the required action, if possible. Thank you.
Yes, I see in thanks, Carlos. This is Jeff. I do see that it's being noted on the right-hand side of Adobe. So we will make sure that that is in there and in the action items.
Thanks.
And Julia said if she has not captured it correctly, then just if you could help her with some of the text. Okay.
And my question is that why there is. I don't want to go why. I want to say that why, not why. In case that a registrar has a restriction to have access to particular GTLD, what course of action is required to remove that restriction? Because if you go to why, you may have another dimension. I don't want to go to that dimension. I want to just change the question. What are the ways and means to remove the restrictions of registrar to have access to some GTLDs in certain countries? That is my question, if it is possible to put it. I would much appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Aubrey? Aubrey, maybe
on mute? Yeah, this is Aubrey. Yeah, I wanted to ask Bruce whether, without getting, you know, into naming names and stuff, whether it would be possible for you to give us some examples of the TLDs this is happening in, not necessarily the country or the registrar, but a few and a later time, not necessarily taking up this meeting. But I'd like to ask if you could give an example of the TLDs this is happening in. At the moment, I would just be guessing at reasons, but perhaps knowing what TLDs it happens in could help us drag down, if you track down, what the answers might be. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Aubrey. And looking at kind of a time check here, we're almost up against the hour, and I'm just trying to see, do we have an hour or an hour and a half for this?
We have an hour and a half on full meeting. Full group.
Right. Okay, good. That's what I was hoping. Okay. All right, Caboose, you have another comment?
Yes. Further to the suggestion that I made, and you kindly positively replied to that, is it convenient that when we have, when they say we means GAC, when GAC has a meeting with GNSO, would it be possible that some of the main issue of this question or questionnaires be put in that meeting instead of some traditional question which may not be so urgent? So what I would say that at the next meeting of ICANN, there is a meeting between GNSO and the GAC, and perhaps some of people like you and Avery and others could participate in that meeting and clarify the questions that you have made and answer to some of the other requests for clarification. That would help. The reason that, Jeff, I am asking this question is the following. I am trying very rigorously to mobilize GAC, one, to participate in this group, and two, to reply duly and timely to any questions has been raised, and have an active interactive participation at the meeting, which helps us, you and me and others, to have a good PDP. Thank you.
Thank you, Kavuth, and I know I appreciate it. I will let Aubrey speak, yes?
Yeah. Basically, I think that I certainly would support that idea. I think it's a request, and we should probably note it under the ICANN Pacific, a request we would have to make, you as well as us, to our respective chairs, who are the ones that schedule that meeting. And such to let them know that you would like that and we would like to do that. So I don't think we can unilaterally say, sure, we'll come do it. but I think that Jeff, as well as myself, are more than willing to do so. And if our chairs schedule it that way, you know, our GMO and deck chairs schedule it that way, then it can happen.
Thanks, Aubrey. I agree with you 100%. Okay, going back to the question. So I get through two, section, work track two. I think we left off at the, because we sort of skipped a little bit ahead. One of the subjects is, or 2.5 talks about the IGO-INGO process, but we note that there's already a PDP going on and other discussions that are going on between the GAC and the GNSO. So we may or may not ask any questions related to that, depending on where all of that is going. 2.6 is questions on closed generics. We have not yet talked about this in Work Track 2, but it is coming up in a future session. It is a question that is a number of questions related to a topic that the new GTLD program committee of the board had decided in the 2012 round that we would not allow those that have generic terms to operate closed top-level domains, but it was not a policy decision, and so we need to visit this subject to see whether we agree with the board or would make some recommendations to change that. So this is a policy subject that should be addressed by our group, and so we have some questions in here to try to give us some information from the community on that subject. The next area deals with applicant terms and conditions, which we will deal with in the next work track call. I'm not going to go over that right now. And then the two topics after that, we sort of started with the registrar non-discrimination, registry-registrar separation, and questions about about the way in which the code of conduct operates, when the code of conduct is waived, or, you know, when someone has a right to have an exclusion from the code of conduct. So there are certainly questions that we have up here, but we can certainly come up with additional ones. Okay, I don't want to go through each of these because there's a lot of them. I want to kind of move on to, just after mentioning the topics, there's a question on contractual compliance on the rollout of top-level domains, and then a difficult one we all try to deal with within our group is how to take into consideration the global public interest, and specifically with this work track, it was dealt with in the nature of PICs and whether that is our public interest commitments and whether we should continue with that or whether there are other ideas of how to accomplish serving the global public interest. Okay, pausing just a minute to see if there's any questions. Okay, no questions. So going on to work track three, most of these questions were in the last version that was sent around for our last call, but it's really discussions on the different types of objections, and really I see for this work track more not say more so than others, but certainly for this work track we are looking for those that have participated in the objection process or the evaluation, different evaluation processes, to give us some additional information. While certainly the discussions within the work tracks have been helpful, and we look forward to more discussions via email, a lot of the discussions really didn't feel complete because there was not that much feedback from those that went through the different types of objections or filed those objections or responded to those objections, whether they won those objections or not. And so we're really looking for some feedback on a number of different areas within those objections, as you can see in section 3.1. Deals with the balance we have to make in each of our groups now, which is really balancing the objections and the contention resolution and all the other processes with the notion of applicant freedom of expression. So for those of you that don't recall, one of the explicit policy recommendations in, or Principle G, basically set forth that we should ensure that the rights of the applicants are balanced, and that that we should make sure that we do not unduly restrict freedom of expression. So there was a concern during the application process or in the policy process, there were some concerns about scandalous top-level domains or ones that could be objected to by within certain countries or certain communities. I don't really believe for the most part that materialized. There were a couple examples, but to the extent that they did materialize, those processes take into consideration freedom of expression. And then a topic that we talked a little bit about, but certainly we'll talk a lot more about, community applications and the evaluation process. So that's section 3.3. 3.4 deals with the string similarity evaluation, which we have not yet talked about. Just to point out, that also deals with, you'll see, the plurals versus singular issue, which there were certainly a lot of groups that had very specific opinions on whether plurals and singulars should be allowed. And then accountability mechanisms of how these were dealt with. So in the last process, there was reconsideration process was available, but we all saw how those reconsideration decisions were structured. There's, of course, the independent review. And so how do the new bylaws affect the accountability mechanisms for the new GTLD process? And then work track 4, I know I'm moving a little fast through these, but everyone can read. And these will be discussed within the individual work track. Deals with IDNs, universal acceptance, application evaluation, more from kind of how they were evaluated, and things like scoring, things like the criteria, that's what they're looking into. And then looking at name collision and some general security and stability questions. And finally, there were some points, there were some miscellaneous questions that don't necessarily fit into work tracks that are on there that we have at the very end of that document. So please, everyone, review this, review the document. Please help contribute. As Avery implored on everyone, these questions, there are a lot of questions. Having your input into the questions is very helpful to make sure that we can get clear responses and really feed into our process. Avery?
Thanks. One thing I wanted to add on this, one of the things that I've been suggesting for leadership and the work track, and that's that while they take another pass through the do some cleanup, do some wordsmithing, that basically that we make an end of the work track and that the next time we bring it to the full group, that would essentially be a first reading of it in this group, and we move the wordsmithing and the sensitivity editing of these questions to this group. So again, encouraging people to get involved at the work track, but I'm pushing and suggesting that we get these back to the full group real soon, and then they'll become an issue for these meetings. So the more you've done at the work track level, the less we'll need to do at the full meeting level. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. Sorry, it took me a second to get off mute as well. I know we're losing some people, so while, Aubrey, why don't we jump on to the next agenda item, which is, it says any other business, but I think we would move on to ICANN 58.
Yep, makes sense to me, unless somebody has an item of any other business that's critical that they want to add at this time, I'd like to get to ICANN 58. And yeah, just letting people know that the full meetings are always 90 minutes, and probably should note that in our meeting invitation, just so people know. But I appreciate that everybody has too many meetings to attend at the moment. Okay, in terms of ICANN 58, we will be having a full, I guess a three-hour session of this group. The first draft schedule has come out. We've seen some possible scheduling program problems that we're dealing with, but we'll also need to determine what is the most successful way of organizing our work in 58. Jeff, I don't know if you or Steve wants to talk about anything specific on this ICANN 58 schedule at this point. Hopefully we'll be done with these questions that we were just talking by then, and we'll be able to sift through some of our substantive issues, some of the substantive issues that would benefit from face-to-face discussion, especially with a wider group than necessarily attends our meeting or is even a participant or observer in our PDP. So, I don't know, Steve or Jeff, was there anything specific you wanted to dive into on that at this point?
Yeah, this is Jeff. I think that I think you covered, I think there may be some additional sessions that we're trying to set up during the meeting. During the full 8 days or 7 days of the meeting. But we don't have anything on the schedule yet. I know that it may be that some of the work facts might want to meet either informally with the people that are there. I know that we have a bunch of people that will be there, so there may be some additional things we try to set up. But looking at the calendar already in place, it seems like there's a lot of conflicts, and we're trying our best to reduce conflicts. But I think there may be some inevitable conflicts that we have, but we're trying our best. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I mean, we'll obviously also be doing a review to the GNSO, I expect. I can't imagine that we wouldn't. And then, of course, there's the meeting or the part of the session that Caboose mentioned that we'll need to take back to our respective chairs to see how that can work out, whether there's a possibility for a GAC MPD subsequent procedures discussion at some point within the time frames that they're already scheduling. So those are obviously two additional things that we'll and I see from Steve Chern, I will circulate an email group that details the meetings that are currently requested, tentatively scheduled. So that'll help. Is there anything, Steve, that you want to say about that now, just to give people a general view? But while asking that question, I see Caboose has his hand up. Please, Caboose. Caboose, I do not hear you.
I have a general question, whether you take it now or you take it at the end of the session. I hope that you would kindly allow me to raise that question. Thank you.
Okay, I'll go back to Steve, and then I'll come back to you for your question. So Steve, please.
Thank you, Aubrey. This is Steve from staff. I just wanted to note that there's at least two sessions, the one that you already mentioned on day one. There's also a meeting scheduled for day five, which I believe is the 15th of March. It's a 90-minute session. It runs from 1700 to 1830 local time. It's more of a, so as opposed to the first session on day one, which is a working group face-to-face working session, the intention is that the second meeting on day five would be more community-facing, more where you're able to present outwards and also have a dialogue with other parties that are rather than just working group members. As I said, I'll send an email around after this meeting to provide everyone and those that are not on this call with an understanding of what meetings are expected at ICANN 58. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Okay,
Caboose,
back to you and your question.
Yes, my question, after you and maybe Jeff also are attend the meeting of the human rights, and you remember that there was a question raised by some of the people in the drafting group for the revision of the framework of interpretation. What I heard, and it was written in the draft, was that the PDP of the GNSO is not subject to human rights. I think it should be. Whether this issue would be addressed at some time within the process or not, that any PDP, at least initial check must be made, which to be consistent with the human rights as described in the framework of interpretations. I think there should be no discrimination between GNSO and CNSO and GAC, because GAC advice should be subject to the human rights, should be respected. We do it in the GAC, and we put now in the change to the operating principle that all GAC advice must be, from the GAC point of view, in line with the human rights and bylaw, all of them, but in particular human rights, and board also need to check that. But I saw in a draft that they said that no, GNSO PDP is not or are not subject to that. And I wonder why it has it should be like that. Whether you want, at least at the next step, somewhere, sometime, address this issue, it would be very consistent with the entire process. Thank you.
Thank you. This, and speaking on that, in terms of, I'm not sure I've gotten that same understanding, but I have to go back. Now, certainly this group does not determine what Workstream 2, a framework of interpretation, says. So in that respect, I don't know that this group has any impact on it. Certainly, as individuals, we can have impact on it. Now, speaking personally, I have always felt, and I think there's room for it, and I think it's allowed, that any PDP should have some degree of impact analysis. I think, you know, there's a slight difference between doing a study of what the impact of our world is on human rights and a declaration that when a framework of interpretation really doesn't know how to tell us yet how to include and how to subject work to human rights, that we would argue that it needs to be from a PDP's perspective. But I personally certainly believe that at some point in our process, we should consider doing a human rights of what we're doing. Two slightly different things, but the framework of interpretation itself and the work that WS2 is doing is not something that the PDP has in its scope. But I certainly do agree that that is a question that needs us in WS2, and I'm supportive of that being discussed there, but that's a personal statement. I don't know if anyone else wants to comment. Yes, Tavis.
Yes, I know that this group does not deal with the framework of interpretation, but framework of interpretation is interpretations of the human rights, respect the human rights in the bylaw, and recommendations of the SONAC, which are prepared and submitted to the board, should comply with that. So indirectly, in an implicit manner, we should mention that any PDP provided need to be checked to be consistent with the bylaw. So in an indirect implication, it is not directly. I didn't want to add anything to your group, but I want that some reference should be made sometime and somewhere to that, because of that explanation that people put two or three paragraphs saying that the PDP of the GNSO is not subject to the human rights. And I have some difficulty to accept that. That is just a question. If you don't want to take it, that is up to you. But this question raised, and I want to make it consistently with the entire process that we do in the ICANN, not saying that this is the PDP for the new round, and that is the human rights, that is the framework, that is bylaw. All of them should be coherent. Thank you.
Thank you, Kavis, and personally, I support that statement. And so let's follow up on that with the framework of interpretation of Stream 2, and let's have on our docket of things to discuss, our relationship to the human rights bylaw and any impact we may be making over human rights as we get further down the getting the work that we're doing done. But I definitely support your statement, and thank you for making it. Any other comments on this topic this time? It'll probably be back on the table again at some point in the future. No? Okay, then anything else on ICANN 58? Okay, then I think that takes us to our last item, which is the sign-ups for the sub-pro drafting team. We have three topics. We have one of them, different TLD types. That one, we're not doing that. We have six people who have signed up for it. That is certainly a good number for a drafting team. More would not be harmful, but I think there's a group there that certainly has sufficient depth to do some of the work. We have a charter topic, predictability and community engagement, in which we have just one person. One person is not a drafting team, so I encourage people that are interested in predictability and community engagement to sign up to that group. People that want to see more, people that think it's absolutely necessary, people that may think think that it could be problematic. I don't know what. But if you have an opinion on predictability and community engagement and have a little bit of bandwidth to basically work on a jotting team so that poor Pascal Banana, the Pascal is not left alone in the drafting team, that would be good. And so there's the sign-up sheet there, et cetera. And then there's charter topic applications assessed in rounds. That's something we've talked about a lot. We've had some good discussions, some good recommendations, a bunch of possibilities that have been discussed with. At the moment, we have two people on the drafting team. Two people is minimum for a team. But from the number of people that were involved in the discussion, I think there may be a few more with something serious to contribute to that discussion. So hopefully there's a few more of you with bandwidth to be able to participate in that and come up with a possible recommendation where we go on this one. This is one of the conversations that has had a lot of discussion, so it'd be good to be able to bring that together in a different fashion. So I don't know if anybody else, I'll go back to the screen now. I see a hand. Yes, Susan.
Yeah, thanks. Avery, is it possible to clarify how you expect these drafting teams to work? I mean, is it anticipated that there will be more phone calls, or is it that they will be working in a small group of however many there are on sort of email and or shared in a Google document or something? I suspect some of the reluctance to sign up may be that people don't know how they'll manage to fit another phone call in. That's certainly one of my hesitations.
Yeah. I think that is really up to the group. I personally, again, think that these things could be done completely over email and working inside a common document, a web document, some other format if that's what the people working on it feel is best. I wouldn't predict phone calls, but then again, I could see if once some of the work had been done, there was a need for a phone call to hash out some of the issues, then that would certainly be possible. But I did not see these as operating the same as the work tracks, which have a steady phone call. From a personal perspective of how these work, I don't think they need phone calls. But it'll really be up to the people that are working on. We're not setting up a work call schedule like we have been doing with the sub-team, at least not until the point we get to think they're floundering and we have to do something, and then we may, bring them into the phone calls. But for now, I was hoping that these teams could just sort of work in a asynchronous manner, using email, using chat, using, cooperative work documents. So hopefully that answers. And I see a couple answers in the chat. Let me go to those. Okay, first there was the question on different TLD types. And it was categories, and we've examined different types of TLDs, actually. So those are some of the discussions that group needs to have. Cheryl says, I thought we were trying to get others, more people involved, not just the existing rapporteurs list. Good point. The rapporteurs are already quite under the heavy load. And then Ruben says, if a phone call is deemed necessary, I suggest asking work team leaders for a spot inside the most relevant work team close to that manner. That may be a point, but these are 10K from CC1, not CC2, not all the work tracks. So quite possibly it could be done if moving that that was truly appropriate, or it could be brought into this meeting. And any other discussion on that? Because Bruce has another point to raise under AOB. We have 4 minutes left, so I want to go to that unless there's any other comments on these drafting teams. Please sign up and please, and if AOB types one, I think we got lots of people, so let us know if you need any help to get going. And perhaps you're already going and work is already going on that I just haven't seen, in which case I'm terribly happy and excited. Yes, Caboose, I see no other hands, so please raise
your hand. Yes, I wanted to raise the following point. The new round of GTLD is one of the crucial and important fundamental work of the ICANN. In the last meeting, there was a pamphlet about the activity of GNSO, among other things, the activities of the group. I think it was briefly mentioned. Is it do you foresee, or have you foreseen, that there should be some very brief summary of the activity of this group to be made available for the entire ICANN, that they know, in particular for those people they don't follow this group, they know that what we are doing, not going at all in any detail, but just sort of the checklist that these are the areas that we have now dealt with, and these are the areas that we are dealing with, and these are the areas that we will deal with it in future. At least it would be good for many people. I got a copy of that pamphlet from the GNSO colleagues in a very informal manner, and that was very, very helpful. So do you intend to include in the report of GNSO some very brief description of what you are doing in a very, very summary case? Thank you.
At least two things I know of will happen. One, we will be doing a report to the GNSO on the status of the group and the questions and issues. And, you know, can certainly go into some detail if given the time. And then two, the policy staff puts together a very good webinar where they do go through the various PDP efforts that are ongoing and discuss the state they're at and the issues that they're going through before every face-to-face meeting. And that webinar is held at least twice, I believe, in two time zones, and is recorded. So at least those things exist. I don't know if in the last minute staff or Jeff or anyone else wants to add something else to it. So I see, Caboose, you have your hand up again. So please let me come to the meeting event. Okay, hands down. Okay, that was the previous time. So yeah, so there's at least those two. If that's not enough, we'll have to talk about what else. But certainly I expect those two things to happen because they happen at each of our face to the public meetings. Yes, Steve, please.
Thank you, Aubrey. This is Steve from staff again. And just to add to what you just said, Aubrey, two other things that the policy staff develops is the policy reports or policy briefings. Those are developed ahead of each of the meetings. What I can make sure that those are sent around to this group to make sure you have it all available. The other thing is there are GAC early engagement documents that are prepared. Those are developed for the GAC, but they're also made public. So what we can also do is to make sure that the group has access to those as well, or I guess the links to that. And I would add one last thing is that we had talked sort of informally, I think, about developing something like a newsletter for this group. I think that might be a good thing to rekindle, considering there are so many work tracks, I think even for the members of this group, it might be useful to have something summarized and for everyone to be able to stay current on what the working group is currently addressing. So just those 3 points. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for reminding me of the briefing and the early engagement document and for bringing up the media again. So we'll do our best to make sure that people know what's going on and staff has an excellent job in producing documents to do that. 1 minute past hour 90. Does anybody have any last things to say during today's meeting? Okay, I just have to check one thing. Okay, no, I have nothing else. I apologize. I've gotten one report of me being muffled. I am just going through Adobe Connect from Iceland in my hotel room. I did not dial in. I did the Adobe Connect. The answer to why I may be muffled says I am always difficult to hear, but this one has been particularly bad. So I'll start dialing in when I'm talking so much and see if that improves anything. Though I'm not sure it would have improved it from Iceland this time, but maybe. So sorry for my muffles. And I'll end this meeting. Thank you very much for all the contributions. And please, please, please get yourself involved in the work, especially those of you that have just been watching and have opinions on what we could do better, what we could do right. Thank you all, and I'll talk to you again in the various meetings. Bye-bye.